And that's kind of where that rogue spirit comes from, is educators getting what they need. And if they're not getting what they need from their administrators or from, you know, their school district, I think it is important to start getting those things on their own. And there are a ton of educators. I've been to a number of ed camps on Saturdays where educators are taking time out of their personal lives to be there to continue to grow as learners. And I feel it is our responsibility in working with students to make sure that we are doing everything we can to continue to learn professionally. And sometimes that does involve going rogue. Rogue actually stands for a relevant, organized group of underground educators. And I think that's the key piece, is sometimes you have to go a little bit underground if you're not getting what you need, and take it from there.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning Podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray, and this is a wonderful conversation today with Rich Ziz. I'm so excited that you are here, Rich.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about Rich. Rich is principal of the Thomas Richards School in New Jersey. He's co-founder of the 4oclockfaculty.com and the author of his new amazing book. I read it. I love it. The 4 o'clock Faculty. It's a rogue guide to revolutionizing professional learning. This is so cool. I tell you, I just got it, read it. I couldn't put it down. So before we go into your book, I want you to tell my audience a little bit about you, your family, and your background.
Excellent. So I am Rich Chiz. I live in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, with my family. I have 3 children and my wife, and we really kind of enjoy the area. I do work in New Jersey as a principal, but travel from Pennsylvania, so it's kind of exciting to experience both areas. And I started as a 5th grade teacher, and kind of worked my way up through instructional coach and technology coach to supervisor. And then as a director of curriculum, felt that I needed to be back with students in the building. So I decided to take a principal job, and I now have a wonderful place to be every day, a 2nd and 3rd grade building. So get the chance to hang out with kids every day and see what they're learning, and work and collaborate with teachers. So it's a wonderful experience.
Well, I can tell you, your enthusiasm comes across. We met on Twitter, and we're going to talk about that a little later. But I have to tell you, I don't know how you do everything you do. You're just, every day I see you put something out there. So tell me, now that professional learning is kind of a focus, why are you so passionate about the culture of professional learning needing to change?
So I've sat through a lot of professional development. I've been responsible for planning it myself and sitting through a lot of it. I've kind of found that it is not where it needs to be. And my personal belief is that professional learning and professional development is the one thing that educators can do in order to change education. So the best thing that they can do is really take charge of their own professional learning. And a lot of times it's left in the hands of a couple of district administrators or a building principal. And I think by leaving it in those people's hands, sometimes teachers are not necessarily getting what they need. So I think it's the one thing that can really change the outcomes that we're seeing in classrooms. And I believe that's the biggest piece that we're missing is the professional learning, professional development connected to what we're seeing with students in the classroom.
Yeah. I'm a professional developer. I have to say, I've done it wrong many, many times. I've stood in front of them, and it was a sit and get. I walked away thinking, what am I doing, right? And we all did it. We've all been part of it, right? And now we have to get teachers involved, and they have to take charge of their learning.
Yeah, it can be rather difficult. And I know when I was in my curriculum role, I was responsible for planning professional development for close to 200 staff members. And yeah, it can be difficult to give everyone what they need but it is an important piece. And, you know, I've done it too, where you stand up there and you're kind of standing and delivering to teachers, and you recognize that they're not getting what they need. So it is an important step to kind of move in that direction.
Oh, thank you. I just love it. And you and Trevor Bryan, maybe you can mention him too. You started the 4 o'clock faculty, and I mean, you're still doing it. You're posting so often. Why did you do this? Why did you start doing this? And maybe tell a little bit of history about it.
Yeah, so it kind of all started with Trevor and I. Trevor and I were colleagues in my first job. He was the art teacher. So when I taught fifth grade, he was my student's art teacher. And we kind of hit it off right away. He was new to the building. I was new to teaching and the building as well. And we just found that we were very similar in our beliefs about education and in really helping students to grow, but in really also trying to help our colleagues to grow as well. And, you know, when I kind of looked at professional development and professional learning, it dawned on me that, hey, you know, Trevor and I have some ideas that maybe we can share and we can help people. So we decided, hey, let's start a blog and let's figure out how to share our expertise with others and to really kind of collaborate with others and reflect on our own learning. And I talk about this in the book, but it all started with a snow day back in January of 2015. So I had a snow day and some unexpected time that I wasn't counting on. And I sat down and said, you know what, today's the day that we're finally going to start the blog. And I had the opportunity to write two posts that day. And those two kind of started it off. And we went from there. And it, you know, it gives both Trevor and I a platform for, you know, sharing our message, which we think is an important one about, you know, really inspiring students with creativity and collaboration and really getting them to do relevant, authentic learning. So we're excited about it. We love posting. It is something where I'm posting almost every day, and it's really an exciting thing for us.
I don't know how you have the time. It's amazing because you put up tips. And I have to say, you caught on something that I've heard from marketing specialists. You put 5 tips for, and everyone goes, wow, yes, and then they click on it. And so you hit on a great strategy that seems to not only be working, but people are really finding it helpful.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because early on, Trevor and I would be angry because we would, you know, post a 1500 word thesis on an idea or something. And it wouldn't, you know, it just wouldn't reach a lot of people. A lot of people weren't seeing it. And then it was some of those more simple visuals, which kind of captured everyone's attention. So we kind of recognized that with Twitter and with social media, it is those kind of simple visuals that everyone kind of gravitates towards. So it's really easy to share them and really easy to learn something in a kind of quick, easy way.
I love it. I've been doing some of the tips and doing it that way for a long time, but now I'm going to go back. You taught me. So your new book, you mentioned it. I'm just going to tell the title again. It's The 4 o'clock Faculty, A Rogue Guide to Revolutionizing Professional Learning. And, you know, my focus has been professional development for over 25 years. So I do call it not professional development. I call it professional learning. And I feel after reading your book, I got it on my Kindle and I got a regular copy because I feel it's the book all of us need to read. So tell me about your journey in writing this. It's just amazing.
So it kind of started with a couple of blog posts that I had done early on for 4 o'clock faculty. And it kind of blossomed into an idea for a book. And so I had kind of realized that, you know, I have a lot to say about professional development. I think I have a lot to share that people would enjoy reading about. So I reached out to a couple of educators who had also written books and talked to them about just the process and trying to go through that. I was fortunate enough to connect with Dave Burgess of Teach Like a Pirate fame and work with the Dave Burgess Consulting Group in order to get the book published. And when I first met with Dave, he kind of said to me, if this is what you want to do, this needs to be your manifesto about professional development and professional learning. And that's really what I tried to do is, you know, state my beliefs about what professional development, what professional learning should look like, and then hopefully help everybody with some tips on how to improve professional learning in their own setting.
Well, you did it, and it's great. I hope more and more people get this, and I hope this, you know, get the podcast out. I'll be talking more about it, but you know, I'm just going to bring this up again. Why do you believe that professional learning should be meaningful and relevant for educators? I mean, it's kind of obvious, but it's almost like, what is your manifesto? Why are you doing this?
For me, it all started, and I talk about this in the book as well, with a learning experience that I had as a second year teacher, and we were implementing a new writing rubric in our district, and I taught math and science. So the district was fortunate in that they were able to provide teachers with a year-long professional learning series on the new rubric. However, it was something that I was not using in my math and science classes. So at that point, I kind of realized, hey, I'm being forced to sit here. I'm not using this. I could probably utilize my time a little bit more effectively if I were able to work on some other things. And I think it kind of stemmed from that. And then stemmed from what I saw as an administrator, kind of realizing that professional learning is an important piece and that a lot of times we're not giving educators what they need. One of the examples I always like to share is in my former district, we used to force our school nurses to come to our staff meetings. And so even when we were talking about, you know, curriculum things, language arts, mathematics, our school nurse was kind of forced to sit there and listen to those things. So I kind of recognized that we're not doing it right. We need to get professional learning that is meaningful and relevant. So if I'm a school nurse, you know, help me learn about head trauma and where we're going with concussions in athletics. Or if I'm a music teacher, what can I do to help my students learn in the music realm? So it really needs to be meaningful and relevant to those educators. I also recognize, having been in the district perspective, that sometimes there are things that need to be done. So if the district is going in a direction with, let's say, STEAM education or with creativity, putting those things in place so that educators can get them as they learn. So if, you know, if I'm a visual learner, help me out with visual learning. If I am somebody who's kinesthetic, get me up and moving in order to learn those things. So providing choice for those teachers, I think, is very helpful in terms of professional learning.
I love this. And so what are a few ways to change a school, you know, or a district's culture around this professional learning? You mentioned one bite at a time. What are some strategies that you've even done in your district?
Sure. So in my previous district, we used to kind of attack staff meetings. So we had one staff meeting a month, and it was really more of a focus on the staff meeting as professional learning, as opposed to a list of policies and procedures and just kind of going through the bullet points. We also did an ed camp in my previous district. So that was something where we wanted to take that learning and put the responsibility back on our educators. And even now in my current building, as I said, I'm the principal of a second and third grade building. I have about 40 staff members in the building. We try to focus our monthly meetings on growing as professionals. So I like to do a lot of modeling. I believe that's an important piece of changing that culture is if as the leader, I'm expecting to see a certain type of instruction in the classroom, I should also be modeling that instruction for my educators during staff meetings. So that professional learning piece is a huge part of that staff meeting culture and really kind of getting that to switch. And as I said, one bite at a time, because you have to take baby steps. There are a lot of people who are not necessarily ready for that. There are some people who are so ingrained in how PD has been done that, you know, it kind of has to start small and build from the ground up. But, you know, it takes a couple of years, but I think that culture can change surrounding professional learning.
Well, culture is everything.
Absolutely.
It really is. And you know, you mentioned administrators, and I probably will go into that a little bit, but every chapter you have the angry administrator update. You have a story you want to talk about or share why you put that in there?
So I think I just think a little bit differently than a lot of administrators who I've met in the past, and there are great administrators out there who are doing wonderful things. And so I think it's important for all of us to kind of connect as educators, right? I will always call myself an educator, a teacher first, and I try to never forget that. But there are a number of administrators out there who do get angry when you try to change things, and they're kind of in love with the status quo and doing things a certain way. And I just felt it was important to help those educators who were going to try to change professional learning to get that support that they need. So to realize that they may face administrators who are not on board, but to try to give them some tips to getting those administrators on board.
Yeah, it's like you said, modeling. Maybe it takes it from the top and the bottom. It is tough to move people that are resistant and so, you know, mired in the status quo, but it does take time. If we can be patient, you're right.
It's something where, you know, again, it is going to take a little while. People have to know that, you know, ultimately you have the best interest of students in mind. And I think that's the important piece of it as well.
So your subtitle is Going Rogue, and you have a chapter on that. And I actually went right to that chapter. So why do you call it the Rogue Guide? And how do you start your own rogue professional learning or PD?
Sure. So the Rogue chapter actually started as an early morning writing experience. When I was writing the book, I was getting up at 4:30 every morning to do a little bit of writing before I was starting my day with the kids and getting off to work. And it was one of those kind of inspirational mornings. I had been recently talking to a colleague, and that colleague was being forced to sit through staff meetings that were really just a list of procedures and policies. So they would have their monthly staff meeting, and they were not getting what they needed. So they decided, that colleague and a couple of his other colleagues, decided to start their own weekly group. So they decided to read a blog post once a week, and then just meet to reflect on it. And that's kind of where that rogue spirit comes from, is educators getting what they need. And if they're not getting what they need from their administrators or from, you know, their school district, I think it is important to start getting those things on their own. And there are a ton of educators. I've been to a number of ed camps on Saturdays where educators are taking time out of their personal lives to be there to continue to grow as learners. And I feel it is our responsibility in working with students to make sure that we are doing everything we can to continue to learn professionally. And sometimes that does involve going rogue. Rogue actually stands for a relevant, organized group of underground educators. And I think that's the key piece, is sometimes you have to go a little bit underground if you're not getting what you need and take it from there.
I like the terms for it because there's so many teachers I've known that really need specific help. And so that's one reason why I have started a coaching program a long time ago. But not everyone can afford someone from the outside to coach them. So always looking at ways where you can support each other. And even co-teaching models. There's a whole bunch of things I'd love to bounce ideas off of you, because I'm writing blog posts myself and want to share what you have, but also kind of expand on it from some of the experiences that some of the teachers I work with have. And so one of the things that the teachers always say to me, but I don't have the time. You know, where can they find that extra time? I know they can do it, right?
There's a chapter in the book on time, and it is something where we continue to, as educators, we continue to put more and more on our plates. And it seems like there's never enough time to do everything that we absolutely need to. I think one of the things that I would suggest is first finding those things that are on your plate that are not relevant, not meaningful, and not effective. So if there are things that we have been doing as educators that we're still continuing to do just because we've been doing them, and they're not effective with students, that's probably the number one area to find some time. As far as the professional learning, I know something we did in my previous district was our teachers were required to be in the building by contract 15 minutes before the day started and 15 minutes after the day ended for students. So what we would do is let's take that 15 minutes and actually learn something during that time. So we did something called Tech Mex Tuesday. So we're kind of combining that idea of Taco Tuesday and Tech Tuesday and sharing something with teachers. So we would start right as the day ended, as soon as students were on the buses, we would show a relevant tech resource, and we would have some chips and salsa, or sometimes we would break out the quesadilla maker. If you feed educators, they will show up. And we kind of went that route. And usually what happened was teachers who were learning something would stay beyond that 15 minutes of required time and continue their own learning. So it's something that there is time during the day. Lunchtime is another great time for teachers. I know it's a very sacred time because sometimes it's the only time that teachers get to themselves during the day. But even, you know, taking once a week or once a month to sit down with colleagues and learn something new during that lunchtime can be an important step as well.
Oh, I love that, because I think when you reach out and you can just work with one teacher, another teacher, or a small group, it's so much better than everyone getting the same thing when it's not meaningful or relevant. And so, we, like you said, one bite at a time. As soon as they start getting and seeing some results, then they want more.
Yeah, and I think that's a key part is finding, and this is also going back to kind of that rogue notion, is finding out who your rogue educators are. Finding out that circle of friends or that group of collaborators that you're going to be able to work with in your building. Not everyone's going to be receptive to it, but even if you're finding, like you said, just one person who wants to collaborate and make things better for students, then that's where it begins.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I'm going to go back to Twitter, because that's how I met you and that's how I learned about you. You know, how did Twitter change your view on what is possible for education?
So Twitter completely changed my worldview. And I will tell everyone that, the moment it comes up. Before Twitter, I was the educator who was not connected. I had swore off Facebook, even, you know, personal Facebook, because I was always told, you know, students are going to try to connect with you, parents are going to try to connect with you, and you want to stay as far away as possible from that. And so I attended a learning session, a professional learning session at a conference where they were talking about Twitter. And I, at the session, I was able to open up an account, and it kind of was left sitting for a couple of months where I didn't really do anything with it. I had opened it up, I had not tweeted out. And then I kind of came back to it after a little while and said, let me see what this is all about, and saw that people were sharing relevant resources and sharing their ideas. And I was finding things that were helping me. So the next step was kind of jumping into Twitter chats, which are amazing sources of information for educators, and then really just connecting. So the fact that I was able to connect with you, Barbara, and able to connect with other amazing educators out there. And, you know, these are people who now, when I see them at a conference, you know, and I've never met them before, I feel like I know them, because it is that personal connection that is happening there. So it really does kind of allow for that collaboration and sharing, and really allows you to extend that learning beyond your four walls, which I think is kind of a key piece of that.
Well, I'm sure glad I met you, because I've learned so much from you. It's been, and then when you write a book, you know, I feel like it's personal now, because I knew you online, I've been connecting with you, now I'm reading a book from you. I feel like it's a lot more personal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been fun. So is there anything else you would like to share before, you know, this is, I always like to keep them kind of short, because I'm probably going to bring you back another time. But anything else you'd like to share?
So the one other piece I will kind of add, when you were talking about time in terms of where educators can find time, something that we have recently started doing on the 4 o'clock faculty blog is posting something called micro learning sessions. And it's a short video, 2 or 3 minutes. And the idea is, I kind of took the idea from my children who do martial arts, and their instructor would always do these very short bursts of skills. So he would teach a skill, he would have the students practice it quickly, and then jump into another skill. And I was kind of thinking about that in terms of education. And so we created these micro learning videos where teachers can get an idea of a skill or something that they can kind of practice in a 2 to 3 minute video. And then there's always a call to action. So it's how can you then take that idea and bring it back to your classroom? So as an example, one of the ideas was, how do we ask more effective questions in the classroom? And how do we get students questioning? And it was just the idea for teachers to learn about questioning and then to sit down and write 10 really good questions that they want to ask their students during that week. And so I think those micro learning sessions are also another way that educators can kind of practice those skills in a short amount of time frame.
That's perfect, because I was actually going to be doing that with some strategies that people want to know more about instead of making it like a, you know, an hour. Why not put short, little? And so I love that idea. We'll have to share some more of those out, or one of them, and at least let them know. So thank you, Rich. This has been really wonderful. I always wanted just to be able to talk to you, and this has just been fun.
Thank you, Barbara, very much.
Oh, this has been great. So I'm really excited that we had Rich here today for the Rethinking Learning podcast. We're going to be creating a blog and adding some resources. So you'll be able to hear more and see more about Rich and all the wonderful things he's doing. And so thank you, Rich, so much.
And thank you, Barbara. I was happy to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Rich Ziz. Make sure you visit barbarabray.net to learn more about Rich, 4 o'clock faculty, and Going Rogue with PD. So please subscribe so you don't miss any of the conversations.